Want to try a free sample of berry pie?
Oh, yeah, I do. Wait, will this send me spiraling out of my routine? Time to consult the online experts.
Hi, Felicia here with 1 million followers. That bite will destroy your metabolism.
Is it really that bad? I had protein this morning. Ugh, but it looks so good.
Only eat after walking 10,000 steps.
Pie is only 2 steps from here. Am I overthinking again? Oh, the kids would really love this.
Insulin sensitivity.
Are we
Stop it.
They don't know your body. Only you do. Signos pairs AI with a biosensor so you can track your body's unique responses to food, movement, and more in real time, helping you achieve your health goals. No fads, no fear, just your signal. Get $10 off select plans at signos.com. That's SIGNOS.com with code SPARK. Signos.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome back, everybody. Fantasy Sports Today, and it's a new day. Yes, it is for the Houston Texans and J.J. Watt, and that's where we'll begin hour two of the program. Joe Pisapia, the Welsh, Christopher Welsh, joining me today. I've been so lucky to have my best friends, the Welsh and Bogman, all week hanging out with me, talking all the sports. It's just so emotional. It's so great to hang out with you guys here, and shout out to Greg for letting me have my friends over to play, because that's always the best when your friends can come over and hang out. And look, I think we've done some great content and we had some great stories, obviously, and no bigger story than J.J. Watt. We do have a few other ones too in our two headlines, so let's get to them. Welsh, J.J. Watt asked for his release from the Houston Texans, the end of an era, certainly for J.J. Watt, and we'll talk more about that in a second. New Orleans at Dallas tonight in the NBA, also Milwaukee at Utah. That'll be a part of the 11-game slate in the NBA. Georgia Tech travels to Clemson tonight in the ACC. Both Pouncey brothers retire together. So Mike and Marquise, the Pounceys have kind of, look, in terms of PFF grades, things went south last year. And it's kind of nice for these guys to kind of leave on their own terms together. And I'm not surprised whatsoever. And Jessica Pegula takes the court tonight at the Australian Open, and she is the daughter of Sabres owner Terry and Kim Pegula. And Kim Pegula, the owner of Buffalo Bills there. Kim is just great. I love when she does appearances. She is so entertaining, so fun. Talk about a great owner to play for. I imagine, like, she is awesome. I loved her spot over in the playoffs time when she was on Good Morning Football Bunch, and she did some great stuff there. So very cool. Good luck to her in this. We bring our attention back, though, to J.J. Watt. And, you know, when you look at the career stats of J.J. Watt, we know he's a Hall of Famer. He's got over 100 sacks in his career, 172 tackles for a loss, 25 forced fumbles, 6 touchdowns in his career also. You know, we talk about him not having a whole lot of window left, but I think the window he's got is good. And I think there's certainly something to Welsh when you think about, you know, the veteran player getting that bounce. You know, you see Brady, but Brady's such a strange anomaly, but you see that veteran player getting almost like a new burst of life. And I think the last few years of the Texans, I think, must have been very tough for him. Yes, they were a playoff team a couple years ago, but this past season was a dark one, I think, for J.J. Watt. I think mentally, there's something to be said for getting that fresh start, and him bringing leadership into any clubhouse is just staggering. I mean, into any locker room this guy goes into, it immediately changes, because that's the kind of dude J.J. Watt is. You've talked about Green Bay. I've already seen some of the Green Bay posts. Look, here's 99. Look at him in the Green Bay Packer uniform in the green. You know, Buffalo certainly is an intriguing spot too. Another playoff team that could possibly be making a run. I like the Titans. But look, at the end of the day, I think it's good that he is leaving on his terms. He's earned that respect. But there is a trend here where the athletes seem to be saying, I don't want to do this anymore. I don't care if I have a contract. I want to go XYZ. I want to leave now. And that is becoming, I would say, complicated in the NFL, Welsh. Would you agree?
I agree. And, you know, something that immediately came to mind when I thought about this was like, look at how easy the Texans are acquiescing this release. They're like, oh, mutual parting. It's the best for him. We want to get this out of here. We love JJ. Tweet, tweet, post, post, all this stuff. And then on top of it, it's like, hey, what about Deshaun Watson? He also wants out. No, we're not listening to that. We're not going to consider that. We're not going to do anything like that. This is a really weird optics. And I'm really curious. At the end of the day, I hope, you know, it's about Houston trying to maintain the trade value for Deshaun Watson. Obviously, you don't want to trade him or anything like that. But I look at how J.J. Watt's being treated, and then I kind of bring it over to the situation that's going on with Deshaun Watson. And I just wonder if the Texans, if they don't decide to do right by this idea, Watson's even talked about sitting out. How messy could this be, or could this be a sign of how the Texans are going to treat this Watson situation?
Well, it's going to be the stickiest of the icky, baby. That's what it's going to be if it does go that route. And I don't think they're going to want to do that. I think they're just trying to stay the course, get to a point where they don't give up too much leverage in a trade, because they do have a lot of leverage right now. They have the piece that everybody wants, and somebody's going to back up the truck. Like Carson Wentz, I think, is still a good get. Some other quarterbacks are going to be out there. They're still, I think, good acquisitions. But let's be honest. I mean, even Trevor Lawrence, right now, like, yeah. Yes, they're going to add him, and that's going to be spectacular. But there's no piece that you're going to add to a team that's going to have a bigger impact than Deshaun Watson. It's just not going to happen.
And he also, you could probably look at it. You could look at it on the other side, that this Watson release and how they're doing it could be the precursor to how real it is. Like, most of us assume Watson is going to be traded. Like, we're not having, you know, false pretenses that like, oh, well, they're going to figure it out and it's going to work. It's just not going to happen. But you got to imagine this release has something to do with that. JJ sees Watson is going, knows Watson, talked to him, knows he's going to go. JJ's like, I got to get out of here. I want out now. So this could be the precursor for all of us to be confirmed that Watson will be traded and he will have a new destination.
I would definitely agree with that sentiment. This is definitely the beginning of the end of the Texans and a new beginning for a new Texans team with a transitional coach. And that's what they've hired. They've hired a very transitional coach here. Let's not make any bones about that. They didn't hire Bieniemy or Leftwich or somebody that they think, oh my God, this guy's going to come in, the new, you know, Sean McVay offensive mind guy. All this. No, no, no. That's not the way they went. So this is going to be a long, grueling process. I still say that if they can get Tua and make that work, that is a fantastic deal. If they can get the Jets to back up the prospect, you know, barrel and just dump them all there in that wagon, I think that that'd be great too. But I do think Deshaun Watson is going to end up somewhere else. I think he should end up somewhere else, because right now he's in a terrible spot. And you know what? Like, you sign the contracts, but at the same time, you should be able to have some sort of influence. And they did a terrible job there giving him influence in the GM search and in the coach sense. We'll be right back. More baseball talk right after this on FST, right here on Sports Grid.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
In hour one, Welsh and I went through the top 10 prospects in baseball, and now Welsh and I are going to talk about some of those young guys in the major leagues who are looking to make a big impact in 2021, not just for reality, but for fantasy also. So, of course, who better to talk about it than the host of Prospect One, the Welsh. Go out there and subscribe to Prospect One and ITL in this league as well, and you get so much great MLB, NFL, NBA content to just make your head spin. So I want to start with one of my favorite guys, and I love this guy, not just because of the name. I do love to say his name, but I also love the stuff, and I love the velocity, and I love how exciting he is, and I understand it could be some volatility in this. I get it, but Sixto Sanchez, he is my guy. I love it. I love the Sixto Sanchez. You look at last year over the almost 40 innings, the guy had 33 strikeouts, 11 walks, an ERA in around 3.5, a whip at 1.21. The Marlins are – you know, clearly looking up in this division because of how good this division is in the National League East. But at the same time, man, you look at Sixto and you see like this guy could be a special talent. Now, wins might be hard to come by here and there. That is fair. But when you're looking for strikeouts, you're looking for peripheral stats. Do you have concerns about the workload potentially coming for him in 2021 compared to last season, which is such a weird year now? And that's the thing. We all have to figure out what to do with these pitchers who didn't get their innings accumulation and if that affects them all positively or negatively. My guess is negative because it seems like everything always is negative when it comes to young pitchers. But Welsh, maybe you see it differently. What are your thoughts on the stock of Sixto Sanchez in 2021?
Yeah, I mean, I'm into him definitely for this year. I'm not sure I worry about workload necessarily. He's one of those interesting guys. I mean, I think workload sometimes is a little bit overplayed where they're like, he only had 80 innings and can he get to here? And these guys are just throwing every day on the backfield. I mean, they're just going all the time. I think it's a bit overblown. What I like about Sixto is he doesn't have some of the mileage that a lot of other guys did. I think he actually originally was signed as, if I remember correctly, a shortstop. So he made that transformation. He was originally with the Phillies and he was magnificent. He had like a 0.5 ERA in his first professional season and he continued to roll. He's got a big fastball with movement that keeps guys off track. He's got a couple other usable strikeout options. He's a bigger strikeout guy that he's going to work into. I don't want his cost to be crazy inside the top 100, which people like to press, but this is one of the few rookie pitchers that I'm interested in investing in as long as the cost isn't too much.
Now, the cost shouldn't be too much in redraft leagues for Cabrian Hayes, and certainly the Pittsburgh Pirates are clearly in full rebuild mode. And you look at last year, again, small sample, within a small sample, 24 games, you had 32 hits, 17 runs, 5 home runs, 11 RBI, and hit .377. Now, guy's not going to hit .400, but Hayes is part of this rebuild that they're going to be experiencing here. He's going to be the everyday guy, we would assume, right now. So where would you put him in your mind? Is he somebody in a deeper league you could start at third base this year? Or is he more of a, well, he's more of a corner guy, corner infielder piece, you know, just kind of let him come on at his own pace. You also have to worry because there's not going to be a lot of lineup protection there for him in Pittsburgh. And that sometimes hurts guys from a developmental standpoint. So how do you see Hayes in terms of value in 2021?
I'm very much into Ke'Bryan Hayes. Now, you pinpointed a guy. It's not ideal to have him as your starting third baseman. But, you know, in roster construction, it may need to get that way. He's a really smart hitter. He's always been a really good contact hitter. He can actually run amazing defensively. And he's had power that he just didn't tap into until last year. This was a guy that connected on all fronts. Baseball's also going to be deadening the ball, as they've said. And this isn't a guy that I'm really worried about that from. He's not like a just barely over-the-wall home run hitter. When he connects, he's going to rock with it. I'm a little bit worried about what you said about protection as far as like what's there in that lineup. So I'm not sure. And this is probably like a really good strategy reason, like you're mentioning, why maybe you don't want him as your starter. You want him as a corner infielder. But I believe he's had an NFBC ADP of around like 140. So take the bat to ball skills. He's going to hit for a good average. He's going to get some homers. Maybe it'll be average runs and whatnot, but he's going to get you some sneaky stolen bases as well. Buy Ke'Bryan Hayes this year.
All right, Ian Anderson was a big part of that Braves rotation and that run they made last year in 2020. He threw 32 innings in the regular season, struck out 41 guys, just 14 walks, had a sub-2 ERA. The whip was 1.08. So, look, I know we've seen pitchers come on and burst onto the scene and be very, very exciting, Welsh, and I'm sure a lot of people are excited about Ian Anderson. And, you know, the Braves had a pretty good track record for the most part with these young pitchers. A couple of misses, but more hits than not over the last decade. And I guess my question to you is, is his ADP a little inflated now because of how good he was in 30 innings? And is that something that maybe shouldn't scare you away because he does have that potential to be a fantasy ace? Because, you know, we don't like to extrapolate. That's lazy fantasy. We always talk about that. Never do that. But if you want to extrapolate even a little bit reasonably, this is a front of the rotation starter. The question is he ready for that in 2021? Or is he potentially a very volatile stock if you do invest in him because he is still so young, and there is still more of the book to get out on him and adjustments that will be made against him?
I think the last thing you said is kind of key here. He's a volatile stock. I don't think a great fantasy trend would be paying high prices for super young pitchers. It's just not really what you want to do. Sixto is on the borderline. Ian costs a lot more. I will admit, I was never the biggest Ian Anderson guy. I always worried about what his walk rate was going to look like. I was worried he was going to go down the same path as some of the other Braves pitchers in Bryce Wilson or Tuki Toussaint. And he did it on the biggest show, which is incredible. He did it through the playoffs. He did it at the back end of the year. And I have to give him credit for that. His changeup became magnificent. He gets his strikeouts. He's a high strikeout guy. It's what you want in fantasy. I'm worried about volatility. I'm worried about him getting hit up a little bit more. And he costs an arm and a leg. He costs everything this year. So I'm just not super interested in paying for a guy with a couple major league innings under his belt in a shortened season. I don't want to pay top 30 SP for him. So I would probably pass on Anderson this year. And if he does pop, okay, that's great. I'll have probably got some boring old pitcher that's doing 95% of the job without the risk.
All right, let's go to the other guy, too, might be the polar opposite, because Nate Pearson's another guy who, young pitcher, had a lot of hype, but did not live up to it last year, did have some health issues also, threw 18 innings in the regular season for the Blue Jays, 16 strikeouts, but 13 walks, the ERA was at 6, the WHIP was 1.50, so this is somebody who I would think now is the opposite, like maybe he scared some people off, maybe people are a little worried, but it feels like there's a need for Nate Pearson in this rotation with the Blue Jays. There's going to be run support. Now, granted, where they're going to play their games might enter into this as well, because Buffalo was not a friendly pitcher environment. Let's just say that last year. So in your opinion, where does that leave Pearson going into 2021? Is he a bargain, or is he somebody that you really don't even want to touch because you really haven't seen him do it at the major league level at all? And that's enough to continue, like you said, maybe draft the boring veteran, draft somebody else who maybe doesn't have the same kind of upside, but you feel better about at least the floor.
I think it's a little bit of column A and a little bit of column B. He's cheap. He's way cheaper than having to pay up for Sixto or Ian Anderson. You know, I'm going to throw Casey Mize in with him as well, because him and Casey Mize, both highly touted pitchers that incredibly underwhelmed on a lot of fronts. And, you know, Casey Mize has got this big devastating splitter that he's got with a couple other pitches. The problem is, you know, when that thing is off, he just became hittable. Nate Pearson has been able to pump. I saw him pump 104 during an Arizona Fall League game against Pete Alonso. Pete Alonso then hit it, by the way, 500 feet, it felt like. But Nate Pearson can rock that pitch, and he's been a really smart pitcher at driveline, 3+ pitches that he tries to work with. But he pitches to more contact than strikeouts that you would want from him. So I think Mize and Pearson are both players because they're so cheap. Why would you not pay for the upside? I want those boring guys, but these guys are going after the boring guys. And these are one of the few that have some upside on both fronts. So Casey Mize and Nate Pearson, I like getting late instead of paying those crazy prices. And, you know, Tristan McKenzie is kind of in some of that crazy price stuff as well. He's borderline with that. Rookie pitchers are prevalent this year. And I really feel like you got to be careful and not pay too high because of that shortened season, whether they were good or bad.
Well, we're in a weird transition with pitchers too, because you have so many older guys kind of aging out, some young guys, and we didn't even talk about Michael Kopech, who didn't even pitch at all last year, right? I mean, there's another guy too, going to be another one where I think he's going to end up in the bullpen this season, to be honest with you, and he's going to be a difference maker for the White Sox down the stretch. That's my opinion. We'll see what happens, and if so, look out. When Welsh and I come back, we're going to talk about the National League Baseball Prospectus projections versus the FanDuel odds for winning divisions. Fascinating stuff. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back after this.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome back, everybody. Fantasy Sports right here on Sports Grid. Joe Pizzapia and the Welsh. And it's time to look at the baseball prospectus projections for 2021. Where they think teams are going to land in terms of win total against the FanDuel odds for winning those divisions. Ooh, wee! This is some good stuff right here, baby. So let's get after it. And this one is another wild one. The National League East. Get this, Welsh. Get this. The Mets, 96-66, please. Like, that's going to happen. I'm a loser Met fan since 1984, and I'm going to tell you right now, we win 96 games, I just might go streaking somewhere. I don't think that's going to happen, but that would be great. Let's win the division. FanDuel goes, okay, it's pretty good, plus 145. Then BP has the Nationals and Phillies ahead of the Braves, which this is a bitter pill to swallow. I'm sorry. The Nats at 85 wins, the Phillies at 83, and the Braves at 82. I don't know where this is going, why the Braves are fourth in this division. I don't know what BP is seeing that we're not, but this is wacky to me. I don't get this. FanDuel odds, by the way, just to reference, the Braves are plus 125, so FanDuel thinks the Braves are going to win this division, or at least Vegas, or however you want to figure that out. The Nationals are plus 600, the Phillies are plus 850. So, Welsh, what an odd disparity here between the Mets and the Braves, and in terms of win total for BP. I saw this, and I had to like do a double take, so I'm giving you some time to let it sink in. And then what Welsh thinks about it, now you can go ahead now that it's sunk in and tell me, because this one is absolutely fascinating.
Yeah, I think it's this division is first off just too competitive to bet any way you want to put it. I mean, look at those odds across the board. I mean, I think if you wanted to try to make some money, I kind of think that Phillies one would be the best bet. I mean, they're all so close. But it's wild to me because I would have probably said the Braves are going to be the team to win. And I know right. FanDuel is with me as far as the odds. The projections are not favorable, 82 and 80. But I don't like it. It's way too competitive. And I agree, this division is way too competitive. If my money was going somewhere, though, I probably would go Philly. They bolstered their bullpen. They made that a massive priority. Their pitching staff is fine. Their hitting is great. I love Realmuto still there. So the odds are way in your favor, but I think it's a crapshoot for this division. And this would not be something I would want to play with if given my own choice.
Well, I think Juan Soto is the best of the best. And I'm looking at that 6-1 there. And I'm looking at, again, the potential. If Scherzer, Strasburg, and Corbin all pitch well, that's it. I'm sorry. Like, they are the best grouping. That's where the interesting odds lie for me, is with the Washington Nationals. And that 6-1 is substantial. Now, I don't love it. I wouldn't be putting a huge number on there. But I think, like we talked about the Indians, you want to throw a small wager on there just in case you can write the narrative. Sure. Because of Trey Turner, because of Juan Soto, because if Robles takes a step forward. And on top of that, they brought in Schwarber, they brought in Bell, they brought in more. And last year they did not. They did not have enough to replace Rendon. They brought in a bunch of veterans over the hill, didn't work. It was a disaster. Again, it's asking a lot for Scherzer and Strasburg and Corbin all to be right, all to be healthy, all to make 30 starts. But if they do, I think it's a very simple case for the Nats potentially winning that division. And I see the downside with the Braves, but my goodness, BP hating on the Braves. What's going on there? It must be a bunch of Met fans working at BP this year. I don't know what's going on there. All right, let's move on to the National League Central. And apparently the Brewers are kicking around the tires on Justin Turner, which would be a great signing for them. You know, the Brewers, I said this last year. I said, you know, enough is enough. I get it. The Brewers are for real. I'm not going to keep, you know, like the A's, I'm not going to keep dismissing them. I'm going to pay attention. Last year, disappointing because Christian Yelich's health. But here's what I don't get, Welsh. The Brewers at BP, 89 wins, top of the division, plus 380. The Cardinals are third, 500? What? Really? They just got Nolan Arenado. I understand that, you know, there's some questions there. I know there's some age there, too, with Wainwright and Yachty and some older guys. But FanDuel thinks they're going to win the division, plus 105 odds for them. The Brewers at plus 380. That might be the best bet possibly of all the ones that we've done, because you can make a case. The Brewers are there every year. Corbin Burns, good. Brandon Woodruff, very good. If Yelich bounces back, and I know that's an if, but the Cubs bloodletting is going to continue. They have them at second, plus 400 odds. FanDuel disagrees. I disagree. The Reds at 79 wins at fourth, and clearly the Pirates all the way at the bottom at 50-1. But Welsh, this is another one too, where I look at that Brewers line and those odds, and I look at that win total, and I go, okay, let's go. Because the Cardinals, yes, they are a popular team. Yes, they deserve that respect. Yes, they do have a lot of talent. But I don't know if they deserve that much respect. And I like where BP is at with this one for the Brewers. And I think in terms of FanDuel odds, this is where the value lies. So when you're looking at this board, what kind of stands out to you?
Yeah, I mean, I think the Cardinals are probably the favorite, but I think it's by the slimmest of margins. So coming back to what you said, the Brewers line at 89 and 73 as far as a projection goes. Thank you very much. They've got one of the best bullpens, you know, the best duo bullpen from Hader to Devin Williams. Woodruff, Corbin Burns, got a young pitching staff that works. They've got hitters that are going to get in there. And if they get Justin Turner, that's a leadership that kind of can help take them over. I think it's so close. Even if I sat here and said, you know, I lean to the Cardinals winning the division, it's so close to get those odds on the Brewers. It's one of the best bets we've probably seen in any of these whatsoever.
Yeah, I mean, it's nearly 4-1. And yeah, the Cubs one, I don't get that at all. Like, I think the Cubs should be worse. I mean, they just lost Yu Darvish.
Nonsense.
I mean, what? Really? I mean, not that Lester's
well, the Nationals are talking, or not. Yeah, no, I think it's no, the Mets are re-engaged about Chris Bryant. So if Chris Bryant goes, I think you're going to see those odds drastically change, because then it's going to show that rebuild of the Cubs. Yeah, I don't buy that one at all.
Well, and I'll tell you what, that means it's only going to go down on the Brewers. So now's the time, if you like the Brewers, to get in on it. This is it. This is the time. Good point. This is where you want to get it. Because if you're right, and let's say Bryant and Hendricks are together in a deal and they go, then that's going to change significantly. It's going to be the Cardinals and Brewers, and it's going to be very tight. It's going to be a whole different thing. But I'm going to tell you right now, if you think the Brewers are for real, and I actually do, this is it. This is your time to jump on that. And they like the Reds in this division too, which is another thing too. Like, the Reds just, who's left in that bullpen, for God's sakes? What? Am I the only one looking around at this? Trevor Bauer's gone. The bullpen's gone. Seriously? The Reds? I don't know. It's so weird. This is, again, I've never done this before. This is going to be an annual exercise for me now. I'm going to find these, compare the two, because I think this is absolutely fascinating stuff. And I think very informative when you're going out and trying to get ahead of the game. And I know it's tough because there's still guys to sign and moves to make. But part of what Welsh is talking about is correct. The strategy is that if you do think Bryant's going this year, whether it be preseason or you know, whether it be in the spring training or not later in the year, now's the time. Jump on that number now before the, you know, the plus 380 goes to plus 210, because that's going to happen. I'm telling you right now, it's going to be that drastic potentially. All right, let's do the National League West. Yeah, okay, it kind of feels like a foregone conclusion, and everybody kind of thinks it's the Dodgers, and that's fine. So the Dodgers are minus 280, so nobody wants to bet that. The Padres, 96 wins. FanDuel's got their odds at plus 210. Then everybody else is not competing, which is fair. Giants, Diamondbacks, Rockies are all 40-1 or more. I guess here's the question, Welsh. Is it even worth throwing that plus 210 on the Padres, or is it just kind of silly because of the depth of the Dodgers and the talent they have? And not that the Padres aren't talented, because they are, but they're not the Dodgers. No one's the Dodgers. The Dodgers are the favorite to win the whole thing again this year, rightfully so. But in your opinion, is there any scenario you can kind of paint here where the Padres are an interesting 2-1?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a scenario for sure. You could see the Dodgers have great depth, but you know, imagine if Bueller went down or Kershaw went down. It's just a step notch.
Well, know, Kershaw going down is always possible, and Trevor Bauer not being good is also more possible than people realize. Just throwing that out.
Yeah, and they're going to, I mean, if they lose, you know, Turner, that doesn't help their cause, and they've got some other young pieces that are there on offense. If anything bad happens in the rotation, the Padres should be, they're gonna be like sharks, just, you know, smelling blood, waiting in the water, just chomp, get in there, because they got the pieces. I imagine they're still gonna make a bullpen piece. Now, if I were being a right gambler and I were prioritizing, let's say I'm gonna pick three. I'm gonna pick three of these. I'm not gonna just go every single division, and I'm not gonna be too much of a degenerate. I'd avoid these. I don't see the payoff compared to like the Brewers and the Blue Jays and a couple others we've looked at, where I'd want to bet the Padres. But if I'm a Padres fan, or I just gotta pick every single division, I think it's I think you can make that bet plus 210. Payoff is there, but I mean, let's all be realistic. The Dodgers are the forefront winners of this division, and not a single game has been played.
Indians, Brewers, Blue Jays, and maybe the Nationals. Those are the four takeaways for me, where you could look at this and you say, okay, I see where BP is coming from. And you can also write a very easy script for all four of them. I think those are the four after this exercise that I would target. Is it the same four for you, or is there maybe one kind of different one? Maybe it's the Rays or the A's or somebody else.
Yeah, I didn't like the Nationals one. I probably wouldn't. I'd maybe go Phillies, possibly. Well, you mentioned the Angels.
Yeah, for you,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, the Angels would be the other one I might throw in there. Because I like the Indians. I'm with that one. I liked the Blue Jays. I'm going with the Brewers. And then, yeah, maybe I'd throw it to the Angels, because I think that division is still pretty wide open if I were picking four. If I were picking three, it would be the three that I think we both agree on: Brewers, Blue Jays, and Indians.
Yeah. Look, this is, like I said, this is fascinating. I've never done it this way before. You know, you could look at some to cross promote two different things here and kind of take away some stuff, I think is really useful for everyone. And I also want to thank Welsh and Bogman all week, my ITL Black Book guys stepping in, helping me out all week. Welsh, you know, I love you, brother. Go follow him on Twitter at @isitthewelsh. Go join the ITL army over on Patreon. Go to In This League, find these guys, subscribe to the podcast. They do hilarious stuff. Great, great fantasy content, baseball, football, NBA, doesn't matter. They do it all. Prospect One Show, so great. Welsh, what more can I say, brother? I love you and I appreciate all your time this week helping me out.
I love you too. And congratulations. Everybody should be very excited for you with the Fantasy Pros. And I'm just glad you had me. That's it.
That's right. And I'm going to have a lot more of you, baby. You ain't going no place. That's right. You're stuck with me forever. In case you missed it yesterday, Andrew Erickson stopped by, talked a little football with us. Who are his guys for 2021? We'll tell you when we come back.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important...
Try a free sample of Berry Pie?
Oh, yeah, I do. Wait. Will this send me spiraling out of my routine? Time to consult the online experts.
One bite will destroy your metabolism. Drink butter coffee instead to kill cravings.
What? Is it really that bad? I had protein this morning, right? Ugh, but it looks so good.
Only eat after walking 10,000 steps.
Pie is only 2 steps from here. Am I overthinking again?
Fruit ruins
Never
insulin
eat after 7 p.m.
One cheat day.
Cut carbs by
30 days. Stop it!
They don't know your body. Only you do. Signos pairs AI with a biosensor so you can track your body's unique responses to food, movement, and more in real time, helping you achieve your health goals. No fads, no fear, just your signal. Get $10 off select plans at signos.com. That's SIGNOS.com with code SPARK. Signos.
Topics in sports wagering, real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome back, everybody, to Fantasy Sports Today, right here on Sports Grid. And of course, we can't truly say goodbye to the fantasy football season without saying goodbye to our dear, dear friend from Pro Football Focus, the one, the only, Andrew Erickson. Andrew, before we get to our little list here, we're going to look ahead to some of your guys, quote unquote, of 2021 that we've already got to keep our eyes peeled for. And some of our guys are going to overlap. Spoiler alert. We got to talk about our boy Tom Brady winning another Super Bowl. Unbelievable. You know, Andrew, every fiber of my being last week wanted to say Tom Brady was going to win, and I just didn't have the guts to do it because I kept saying, but everyone's saying he can't, and that's when Tom Brady's going to win, but it just didn't feel like anybody could beat the Chiefs. Well, he did yet again. So are you just as astonished as I am? I mean, what more is there you could say about Tom Brady at this point?
It's unbelievable what we're seeing. We're witnesses to just history right now, and I think that we should just all try to enjoy it. The fact that this guy is doing the unbelievable, and the matter of the fact is, if he wasn't a six-round draft pick, if he had been taken, you know, number one overall, he probably would have retired already because he probably would not have had that much more to prove. But he just continues to find ways of motivation, and I think that's so huge with anything you do in life is if you don't have conviction to do something – chances are you're probably not going to do it, but he, in his maniacal way, is being able to figure out like things to challenge himself. And now, okay, I'm going to leave Belichick. I'm going to go to a new offense in a COVID offseason. You know, no reps. I want to make it as hard as possible. I'm going to beat the Chiefs in the Super Bowl at home. And then next year, I'm going to get to play the Patriots in Gillette. I'm going to beat Belichick head to head. I mean, that's all he's got.
You know, he's living for that. You know, that is circled on the calendar, Michael.
Oh, I got it circled on the calendar.
Oh, that is going to be good television for sure. And who knows, maybe Tom Brady will make it back to repeat. I mean, at this point, I mean, why would anyone tell him no? So let's look ahead to non-Tom Brady stuff, and let's start a quarterback, and let's start with one of your guys that you got your eye on. And I understand why, because Jalen Hurts certainly has a ton of athleticism. Another guy who kind of like in that Brady mold. Every time you tell him he can't, or every time you tell him, you know, someone else is better, he goes, oh, yeah, well, watch me. And I think it feels like a foregone conclusion that Wentz is going to get moved just somehow. I know it's taking a little while right now, but still, it feels like Jalen Hurts at some point in time, whether it's, you know, the beginning of this year or not, is going to get a chance. So why is Jalen Hurts for you somebody to keep an eye on in 2021?
When I look at fantasy quarterbacks, the thing you first need to ask is, do they run, number one, and do they throw deep, number two? Mm-hmm. Jalen Hurts checks off the boxes when it comes to rushing upside and throwing the ball downfield, being aggressive. You know, that's what he did last year in the games that he played, and those translated into fantasy points. Weeks 14 through 17, he averaged nearly 24 fantasy points per game, and that includes week 17 when he was benched for who knows what reason. If you remove that game, he was around 26.6 fantasy points per game, which only trailed Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson. Again, the theme with these guys is they add value as rushers. And again, we can talk about how great Tom Brady is. He is great. He's awesome. He wins all the time. But he's not the best fantasy quarterback because he doesn't run. It's just as simple as that. Right. He's got to throw for 400 yards. He has to throw three touchdowns. He doesn't have a type of floor that is offered by these rushing quarterbacks. And again, people are pointing to Jalen Hurts' his completion percentage. Oh, it's terrible. Well, he didn't have any time to build any chemistry with any of his receivers.
Right. And how many wide receivers does he really have there anyway? Which brings us to another guy, too, who's on your list, which is Dallas Goedert, who had a fine season last year. Zach Ertz looks like, I don't know if he's going to kind of go in the package along with Wentz or what, but I think his days of elite tight end are probably behind him. That being said, even if they do go out there and draft a big-time wide receiver, Dallas Goedert is still going to be part of that offense. So do they kind of go hand-in-hand for you, Hurts and Goddard?
Yeah, PFF tweeted something out, you know, with my face on it. Obviously, you know, I got to represent the brand, but it's basically the Eagles. You know, the combination of Hurts and Dallas Goedert is set to take flight. You know, I like the little Eagles, you know, moniker there.
I see what you did there. Wait a minute. I'm the one who makes the dad jokes around here. When did you get to do this? That's not fair. You can't rob me of the one thing I do so well. I mean, come on, brother.
I've grown up a lot in these past, you know, couple months. In true. Quarantine.
2020's aged us all, my friend.
But Dallas Goedert looks like he could potentially be his number one target next season. And Dallas Goedert, in the games that Zach Ertz missed last year, weeks 8 through 12, he was the number two fantasy tight end. You know, averaged 12.3 fantasy points per game, again, behind only Travis Kelce, who was probably averaging like 20 fantasy points per game at that point. But, you know, if you're getting the number two tight end, you know, we look at Dallas Goedert's current ADP, he's like way down there. Like, people are kind of like forgetting about him, and he was hurt last year. The whole Eagles offense was really kind of not organized. I'm not sure if that's the best way to describe it. It was kind of a mess for the most part.
That's a very pleasant way to put it, I think.
It was very inconsistent. There was no flow to the offense whatsoever. And now, if they go in with Jalen Hurts, they can build an offense around him specifically to highlight his rushing ability, highlight the ability of the tight end position. You know, they can use Jalen Reagor still. You know, he's a talented rookie receiver. Yes, he's not Justin Jefferson. But is he just so terrible that he's still a first-round pick? Like, he still looked decent enough when he was playing, when the ball was thrown to him accurately. He can win downfield if they draft another receiver. You know, they have a top, I believe, in the pick in the top six. You know, I've seen them mocking two guys like Jamar Chase or Devontae Smith. So there's a lot of options for this passing offense to increase a lot, be more efficient in 2021. And I think that you're going to see that from Jalen Hurts.
All right, let's move on to a guy that you and I both have big expectations for. It's Cam Akers. That Patriots game was his coming out party. I'm sorry. I was just blown away by him in that game. He had a very good run in the playoffs as well. So I am all in. I have him as an RB1 going into next year. I don't know if everybody else will. I think he's probably going to be right on that fringe, maybe 10, 11, 12, somewhere in there. But I am all in on Cam Akers. And I think the Stafford addition really helps too, because to me, you know, Stafford's going to be a very capable quarterback going in there and maybe giving them even some more opportunities to score. And I love that. And I think Cam Akers is going to be a big beneficiary of the veteran quarterback presence. So for you, why is Cam Akers high on your list?
When I looked at the difference in terms of quarterback play between Jared Goff and Matthew Stafford when the trade first went down, kind of, I just looked at the touchdowns, basically. All right, how many touchdowns, you know, per offensive drive, basically, are we losing or gaining from the quarterback change. And over an entire season, you know, Matthew Stafford's worth like 10 more touchdowns
on offense
than Jared Goff is, or at least was last year. So again, you look at the running back position, very centered around touchdowns. I like that for Cam Akers. And the other thing as well, Matthew Stafford just offers more as a passer, as a threat downfield. Stack boxes. Cam Akers faced the second most stack fronts last year, 52% of the time. No surprise, Jared Goff's the quarterback. Okay, well, we should probably stack the box because they're obviously not going to throw the ball downfield. That's what teams were doing. Adrian Peterson was at 48%. DeAndre Swift was at 36%. So if Cam Akers sees a 36%, which is definitely more around the average, I mean, that's just going to give him more opportunities to bust off big runs. And you can't forget about the fact that Swift was super involved in the passing game last year. 46 catches, 56 targets, you know, as a rookie it's pretty good for a rookie running back. So I think that really bodes well for Cam Akers, who flashed a little bit of the passing game as the season kind of, you know, went on towards in the playoffs of the Rams.
And Deontay Johnson, now there's a guy that I was very much in on last year, and I'm going to double down on it. I understand he had a lot of drops, but he also had a ton of targets. So with great power comes great responsibility. As far as I'm concerned, I don't see anything changing right away. I mean, yes, I'm sure they're going to address the run game somehow, but Deontay Johnson certainly seems like the safety blanket, at least for Big Ben, in my opinion. So we back in again on Deontay Johnson in 2021?
Of course we're back in on Deontay Johnson. I think that people are overblowing the whole drop thing. Drops are so hard to project from year over year. It's almost impossible to be, oh, well, this guy drops the ball a lot. He must be terrible. Look, the thing with drops is, why are you throwing them the ball? Because he's open. That's the most important part. If N'Keal Harry had 15 drops, I would be ecstatic. But he can't because he can't get open. So he doesn't get the opportunity to drop the ball anyway. So I apologize to N'Keal Harry, just a very sad Patriots fan, you know, speaking on N'Keal Harry. But Deontay Johnson, looking at his expected fantasy points, so basically looking at his opportunity in the offense, he was the 7th ranked receiver at 16.8 fantasy points per game, expected fantasy points per game, which ranked 7th among all wide receivers last year. He underperformed by over 22 fantasy points, and that just means that things are going to kind of regress to the mean. And the thing that with him in specific is he underperformed versus Chase Claypool, who overperformed.
Right, right.
So again, those are going to meet in the middle, and I have to assume that their ADPs are probably going to be kind of close, probably kind of similar to like a Tyler Lockett, DK Metcalf. You know, people won't necessarily be like, oh, it's definitely this.
Robert Woods, that also comes to mind in recent years too.
Because they're both going to be, you know, they're both nice guys to target for sure, but because they're both nice targets, no one's going to kind of – they'll both kind of end up being values based on realistically, you know, Deontay Johnson should probably be ranked higher, at least the way I see it.
Well, I mean, is it so simple as saying Deontay Johnson in full point PPR? And if you're in a standard league, you take the touchdown equity of Claypool. I mean, that feels like a good in between. And if you're going to split the difference, then take Deontay Johnson in the half. That's kind of my approach anyway.
No, that makes a lot of sense. I don't know. I mean, I only play with, standard leagues.
I know people do.
Only dinosaurs play those leagues.
Well, look, you know, I'm not a dinosaur, but I do know some people still play in those, or they play in the half PPR, which we can have the discussion depending on where you're at. All right, one more guy on your list. And look, last couple of years, I was very excited about Deebo Samuel in San Francisco. I thought it was a great landing spot for him. But I have to, at a certain point, kind of just come to realization that dude's just not on the field. And I love when they drafted Brandon Ayuk because they identified him as a guy that fits the style of what they want to do. Quick slants over the middle. That's what they do. And Brandon Ayuk was good at that. Runs the jet sweep, does all that stuff. Ayuk, I think, is going to be a very trendy pick. He finished very strong in 2020. So do you think 2021 is going to be the year of Ayuk?
I think so. All he did on the field was produce. You know, every single week that he played, he was absolutely insane. He ranked, you know, in terms of points per game, you know, he was up there with some of the best receivers. You know, he ranked 17th at points per game. He ranked inside the top 10 in terms of expected points per game. And no one's ranking Brandon Ayuk as a top 10 guy, but that's literally what his production was as a top 10 wide receiver last year in full point PPR. So Ayuk just profiles as the alpha receiver in that offense. Again, Deebo Samuel is found his role as someone that is all yards after the catch. The guy has negative air yards every single week. And again, that's going to end up limiting his production because sometimes he's not going to just be able to, you know, break five tackles on a run. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned it, his injury history, you know, that is because of the style of play he has. He doesn't just, you know, run slants and get open downfield. He's everything is, you know, after the catch. So
well, that's also the offense. I mean, when you watch the 49ers, I mean, they are attack the middle of the field, quick slant. I mean, that's what they do. So, I mean, he's a product of that. But you're right. Ayuk has a little bit more of that. That deep threat potential in there, and we'll see what happens with the quarterback position because that's certainly in question as well. And it's tough to put Ayuk, despite the productivity, into that wide receiver one discussion because wide receiver one is just so darn deep. I mean, there's just so many good names in there. But Ayuk kind of does feel like that group of T. Higgins, C.D. Lamb that, you know, is going to, let's say, have that potential to jump. And we love those jumpers at wide receiver who can jump into that next tier. You either draft him as a two, but they play like a one. I love that. Those are my favorite guys. And you're like that. You know, I draft you as a one. That's a lie. I draft you as a one. You are a one. You always return investment. I want to thank you all year for your contributions here. And I can't wait to continue with the Black Book this year, you coming on. And I can't wait to continue us talking football together because it's so darn fun. Again, if you haven't already, please go follow this man on Twitter at @AndrewErickson_. Check out all of his work on PFF, Pro Football Focus. He's doing a lot of draft content there. Real quick, 10 seconds. Does Brady repeat again in 2021?
No, because it's going to be the Patriots.
Oh, God, I don't feel good about that. But let's hope from your mouth to God's ears. We'll be right back with more Fantasy Sports Today right after this. Don't go anywhere. Stay on Sports Grid.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome back, everybody, to Fantasy Sports Today. And just as a reminder, if you can't get enough baseball, well, we got you covered because Sunday mornings, 8 a.m. Eastern, Matt Stryker and me, Joey P., Diamond Bets will be back. I'm very excited. It's going to be our second season. We got renewed. I'm so proud of us. So check us out every Sunday morning, 8 a.m. Eastern. Matt and I are going to help you out with all the baseball that was, all the baseball that will be. It's a really good time. We have great fun on that show. And I'm very excited to be doing it here again on the network on Sundays. And I'll be around the network. I'm not going anywhere. I'm still on the grid, so I hope you stay there also. But again, I want to send a shout out and a thank you to the team because it's a team effort here. Whether it's Danny who puts all the graphics together, whether it's Brett who's booking guests and pre-taping interviews and making all the things that happen, whether it's James back behind the scenes making sure we look handsome, which let me tell you, that is no small feat. Especially for me. I just want to thank this team effort. And of course, our fearless leader of the team, Craig Mish, for giving me another opportunity. Craig and I have worked on and off for many, many years, and I'm sure we'll be on again before you know it. But they're going to come back next week. Craig Mish, Davis Maddock, Fantasy Sports Today. It's going to be brilliant. Stick around with those guys. It's going to be fantastic stuff. And I just want to thank Mike Cardano and Greg Sussman for all their support. I have been with FNTSY and then Sports Grid since 2016, and now it's 2021. And it's like a family here. It's a great family environment. We have such fantastic programming, such wonderful hosts. It really is a great place to be. And I'm excited to be part of Sports Grid and stay in this family. So although you can follow me on Twitter at JoePizzaPia17 and check me out on the Fantasy Pros podcast and video stuff going forward and get your black books always over on Amazon. I'll still be here on the grid. And I'm still very much looking forward to what we're building here because when it comes to sports, fantasy, wagering, that's how we watch the games. That's why Sports Grid's so great. Finally, we have a network that's catering to the way we watch the games, and I'm so grateful for you giving me a part to play in it. So once again, thanks to the team here at Sports Grid, and I do mean team, and I'm looking forward to wishing Craig and Davis good luck next week on Monday when they come back. So that'll do it for me, but the story of the game goes on. For everybody here at Sports Grid, I'm Joey P. We'll see you next time, kids.